So this podcast is kind of a remembrance, I suppose. It's a meandering through the past. And the problem with the past and the human brain, as Dr. Elizabeth Loftus of the University of Washington would probably refrain, is that many things we think are true about the past, many of our memories aren't quite as accurate as we might think they are. It isn't to say that the brain is lying to us, it's just that there probably could be no perfect recorder of the past. So the brain remembers those things about an event that were significant, or at least seemed important. Now, I'm not going to talk about that so much, but I have an admission to make. When I was a graduate student at Central Washington University, and this is in Ellensburg, Washington, I wanted to save money one of the quarters I was in school. So I basically lived in a space that the university bookstore, this bookstore that was off campus, excuse me, the unofficial bookstore, they basically had a space, like they had an outer wall and an inner wall. So essentially they had a space between these two walls where they kind of created this sort of half-ass, post-apocalyptic, horrific little apartment. I mean, essentially it had like a little shower and a little sink, but all the parts looked like they came from the dump. And the thing is, I think they only charged like $100 a month. And you have to understand that that's like flop house rates. I mean, that's, when you're paying $100 a month, you're basically paying to live in a flop house. And actually, it had a kind of weird charm to it. I mean, I'm not saying that I liked living that way. I kind of hated it. But it sort of got me used to things. Like, I kind of learned to accept the fact that, maybe having lots of stuff isn't a great idea unless you're rich. Because for most of us, we're kind of stuck that in that apartment life, transient hobo existence. I mean, I don't know. I suppose I do pretty well, and I suppose in a sense I have a good job, but I don't really say to myself, wow, I feel rich, because I don't. I feel like I'm 3 to 4 to 5 to 6 months from destruction. Like, I could probably, if I lost my job tomorrow, I could probably make it by without starting to go into serious debt for about, I don't know, 4 months, maybe 5. But then in about 6 months, and at most a year, I'm on the streets, That's reality. And I'd like to tell you, well, I could just go live with my brother or sisters or whatever, but that's not, to me, reality, because I could not exist that way. And maybe I am too proud, and that's something I'll have to learn to get over at some point in the future, but I hope I don't have to learn that lesson. That would be a tough lesson for me. But then, that's the thing, though, is that really, what should we be too proud to do? I mean, should we be too proud to live in a wall? It's like, I know living in a wall sounds crazy, but I did that once, and it's sort of, I don't know, does that mean that I'm okay with that? I'm not really okay with it. I just consider it a condition of existence I can accept, that I can tolerate. I live a fairly decent life these days, but then again, there are people who live much better than I do, way better than I do. On the other hand, according to the pie chart of Americana, supposedly I'm, doing pretty well. But that's the kind of the point, is like, if I am doing pretty well, I can't imagine how most of America is doing. I can't imagine what it's like out there. It's got to be terrifically horrible. And it's got to be worse when people tell you, well, but things are so great, so we're surprised you don't think things are kicking. I mean, it's got to be terrible when the Hills and Rafs and the Krugmans of the world basically come out and say, well, America, you just really have a negative attitude. Well, you know what? Maybe they have a negative attitude because they have two or three jobs. Because they don't, that basically their employer had to reduce them to 30 hours a week so that they didn't have to take care of health insurance. Have you ever thought about that, Mr. Krugman? Have you ever thought about that, Mr. Hilsenrath? That's the thing, is I don't think that these gentlemen have. I think they're kind of scumbags. But that's the thing, too, is that even though I lived in a wall once, and even though I think that that was interesting, I just don't want to have to do that. But on the other hand, I accept the fact that that could be my reality in the future, that level of accoutrement. I mean, kind of like Charlton Heston, in Soylent Green. He lived in a little flophouse apartment with his book, that old dude. I always forget that guy's name. E.G. Rob, you know, E.G. E.G. Robinson or whatever. That guy was so freaking great. But anyways, E.G. Robinson. Yeah. So he lives in that crappy little apartment. And I when I first saw that movie as a kid, I thought, God, that's terrible. He lives in that crappy little apartment. But you know what? I look around my apartment and I look at my life and I think about that some, quarter or semester I spent in the wall. And I don't know, maybe that movie wasn't too far off. I got into H.P. Lovecraft a few years ago, and I can't say that I've read everything of his because I've been a rather lazy reader of late. But I've read a fair amount, and there's this one story of his, The Rats in the Walls, and it's not, it's got nothing to do with this story that I'm talking about. It's about, this guy who, revisits some ancestral, old, basically castle slash villa or mansion in Scotland or England, and he's there and he starts investigating these noises in the walls, and they say it's rats, but it's got to be something else because it seems bigger than rats. And so he investigates and he goes on a little adventure and he ends up discovering these, ancient, caves and these ancient cave people that just basically were that lived, down in the bowels of this particular castle, and it was really, terrible. So that's got nothing to do with what I'm talking about. But really, would you live in a wall? I mean, where is your line in the sand? At what point do you break? Most of the people I know, they break if their cable TV stops working. So my question is, are most people just ready to just turn into crazies if basically if the cable TV gets shut down, or if they can't, have all the stuff that they used to get with their frickin' EBT card, if they happen to be on the EBT card? I mean, that's the thing. The line between stability and chaos at this point in American history might be a rather thin line. In fact, it could be a thread of nothing. It could be a will-o-wisp. It could be nothing but fog and mist separating stability from chaos. And all of it depends in part on whether or not people would be willing to live in a wall. Would you live in a wall? What's your level? What's your point at which you become angry and infuriated and frustrated? How much of your life can you give up? If the government came along and said, you know what? We're going to vaccinate your children, no matter what. And yeah, it's because, the news article says there's this scary thing, and it's really scary. And according to the news, which in no way is corrupted, in no way controlled by the government and corporations, according to the news, if you don't want this vaccination, you're a bad person anyway. So I'm here, I've got a gun, we're going to vaccinate your kids, and we're going to vaccinate you. Would that be your breaking point? Would you say, you know, I don't know, I'm not sure I'd like to be a human experiment at this point? Where would you stop? Where would you say no? And keep in mind, I'm not defending anti-vaccination peoples. I think vaccination is a reasonable public health kind of tool if done appropriately. My concern mainly with vaccinations is whether they're actually done appropriately, whether we actually have an agenda that is about public health rather than corporate profits. That's my main issue. But yeah, who knows? Who knows? And it could be anything. It could be this Zika thing, the Zika scare. Zika sounds really scary. It sounds horrible. Zika sounds horrible, and it sounds either real or a complete psyop, and it could totally be bullshit, and it could totally be a way to scare people to not have kids, scare people to not go to Brazil because Brazil looks like it's imploding, maybe even as an excuse to cancel the Olympics, maybe as an excuse for world trade crashing. It's Zika. Oh, why is the Baltic Dry Index below 300? Oh, it's Zika. Why is the Harpex, you know, in the toilet? Oh, it's got to be Zika. Why are emerging markets melting down and, you know, Dr. Copper and oil telling us a story of basically global depression? Oh, it's got to be Zika. So what is your breaking point? At what point do you say, I'm tired of this bullshit? I mean, at what point do you do that Howard Beale thing and say, you know, I'm mad as hell and I just can't take it anymore? Because I got to tell you, I reached that point several years ago. And then I pushed through. I was on the little turning circle like most of you. Denial, anger, bargaining. Denial, anger, bargaining. And every once in a while, I would go through anger. Never willing to accept depression, and certainly never willing to reach acceptance. But most of you out there, you know, you're just going to stay on the turning circle. Denial, anger, bargaining, pretending everything around you is normal until you basically blow up. And my advice is, why don't you just vent a little? Why don't you release a little bit of the anger? Because the things that are happening to the world, these are historical in nature. They kind of transcend us, the little people. I'm not trying to say you're irrelevant, but in the large scope of things, I'm not really relevant. Neither are you. We're all just kind of cogs. I wish we had choices. I wish that, you know, we could vote in some election and it would change things. But I'll be blunt. At this point in human history, I think most of what's about to happen is fait accompli. I think what is going to happen must happen. It will happen. It might not be predictable, which is totally possible, which means even though I'm saying what is about to happen is guaranteed, what I'm really saying is we're about to enter a period of incredible entropy and discontinuity, and within those environments, anything can happen. You could end up having your rights taken away. You could end up having your money taken away. They could do a bail-in and take all the money out of your savings account. They could do that. They could involuntarily vaccinate you. They could involuntarily, you know, move you into some facility. They could do all sorts of things. And when I'm telling you this, I'm not trying to scare you. I'm trying to prepare you for the fact that these things could happen. Most modern cities have about a week or 2 weeks worth of food on hand. 80% of all Americans, that's 80%. That's 8 in 10 Americans live in cities, or at least in urban environments. So basically, most Americans are surrounded by about 2 weeks of food, maybe 3. What do you think happens when that food is gone and the only provider of food is the government? What happens when you're told, oh, that big house of yours, that's too big for you. You need to accept some people. Some people need to move into your house. What happens when they start cutting up your house and until you basically have a tiny little slice of nothing? And you feel like you're living between two walls, or actually in a wall. So I don't know. Everyone's got to figure out, you know, how much they'll take. Everyone's got to find out at some point in their life if they're willing to live in a wall.